Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
All right, happy Monday, and we're glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN. By the way, weren't liberals all in favor of peaceful resistance? By the way, not even peaceful sometimes. And so, anyway, some conservatives are at Shakespeare of the Park this weekend, and, oh, you'd think the world came to... Did they not understand the importance of Shakespeare? We'll get to that. One, the woman who actually went and protested because they're a little tired of the nightly assassinations and Julius Caesar, you're interrupting our play. It is Julius Caesar. Have you no couth, sir? Madam, what are you doing? The unwashed take to the stage. Disgusting. And anyway, so they're upset, even though these were peaceful protests. We'll get to that in a second. We have, I think, one of the most dangerous moments in history with now Robert Mueller and this guy, the Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and James Comey, an investigative creep. And frankly, it's beyond investigative creep now. Even Adam Schiff is acknowledging no evidence of collusion. And we'll get to that in the course of the program today. We're going to do a follow-up to last week's now assassination attempt against now named congressmen, we found out late Friday, and much more. I want to start with something that is perhaps, I think, as important as anything else. If you think of all of these groups that I have discussed that pay individuals in this country to monitor every second, every minute of every day of talk radio and Fox News, all in an effort to get a soundbite, a word, or a sentence that they can use, parse, take out of context even, and attack advertisers, make your advertisers go away, make the show impossible to keep on the air. It's just a form of silencing conservatives. And, you know, I really do praise the group MediaEqualizer.com, and they started this group on their own in spite of accusations to the contrary. And I actually found out about it weeks after they had started it to defend me in part. And I'm very honored that they have, and I think they've been very effective at neutralizing and saying, okay, two can play this game, although they don't support boycotts, nor do I. But this whole issue of speech now is coming to a head in the country. And, you know, there was a segment on Morning Joe today, Liberal Joe with Mika. They're such a cute, adorable couple, aren't they, Linda? They're so adorable.
That's lovely.
So you think they hold hands as they share the news with each other and have their daily emotional breakdowns with each other?
I think they intertwine at all possible times.
You know, it almost is must-see TV in this sense. You're like, okay, when's the emotional breakdown coming? This president. Oh, God. What should
we do? They're going to write their own vows?
I don't know. Did you see there was some Facebook post by some woman that said, I asked permission of my infant child if I can touch them before I touch. Did you see that?
No, that's bizarre.
My God. You think? I mean, this is the mind of liberalism. Anyway, so I don't have any issues with all of these Never Trump people, except it's obvious they're dying to be relevant again, and they're dying to be noticed. And they're dying to be able to point to conservatives like me who supported Donald Trump's agenda, which I'll get to in a minute, for say, we were right. And they've gone forward with these bizarre conspiracy theories without any evidence of collusion with Trump and Russia. And I'll get to that, too. But so I guess Charlie Sykes is this Wisconsin radio guy. And I think he had some certain level of success in Milwaukee, which is a great market. And I praise him. He, you know, we have all of these people, but he's gotten more attention being a never Trumper at any other point in his life. And apparently is sort of a little obsessed with me, and just like liberal Joe and Mika, and they take their cheap shots, and I'm perfectly willing to engage when I feel like it. And today I was just too busy, honestly, to deal with it. And it goes on the air today, and I just want to play this for you. And he talks, do they even know when Shakespeare was written, when he wrote Julius Caesar? Do they even know? Do they know a tubulte? Do they get it? Do they not appreciate the art involved here in this play, that these disruptors must show up on the stage to silence the voices of those that artistically want to express themselves by having a nightly assassination of a Trump lookalike? Do they even know? Play it.
Do conservatives who have spent so long making the case for tolerance and free speech, do you really want to now be storming the stage of a William Shakespeare play to shout it down? Oh, does this make any sense? You know, now, this may make sense in the minds of people like Sean Hannity, but really.
Yeah, no, and the moral of the play, by the way, is not that he's assassinated and it all turns out great.
No.
The moral of the play is he's killed and everything goes to pot.
Right. And you know, okay. Ben,
how many of these people have read this play?
Yeah. Have to read.
How many of these protesters have actually read this play? How many could tell you what century William Shakespeare wrote, what century Julius Caesar lived? This is cringeworthy.
It's cringeworthy because the mere masses don't fully understand the subtlety of the message of Julius Caesar, and that it all works out good in the end. The unwashed, uneducated masses of America, they are so bloody ignorant. It is breathtaking. You can hear Joe and Mika laughing in the background. And I'm like, you know, all these years, I have never, ever liked people in my profession. I just haven't. It's natural and instinctive for me. I don't care what they say. I honestly don't. I don't care that they attack me. They make a living attacking me. And there's a lot of jealousy that I've been successful. I get all of that. That's irrelevant to me. You know, and I'm thinking about this, and probably the average person, and I was lucky in as much as my parents didn't go on vacation. They never bought new cars until they got much older. They sacrificed all this money to give my sisters and myself a private education that they couldn't really afford. And I went to a seminary in high school. And yeah, I made the dean's list for the years I was in college before, quote, I became a college dropout, which is in every article about me, because I found radio and my passion and my love. And then I pursued it, never thinking I'd be successful after 2 decades of my life doing blue collar work. So yeah, I kind of identify as a blue collar guy, and I'm proud of it. And it made me into the person that I am today. And I'd highly recommend washing dishes and cooking and busboy and bussing tables and waiting tables and tending bar and laying tile and hanging wallpaper and painting houses and framing houses and falling off a roof, even as long as you survive like I did for 2.5 stories for decades of your life, and painting cars and doing my own mechanic work and buying $200 cars and $350 cars. Yeah, I kind of recommend it because it made me the person I am today. And to listen to this snobbish, arrogant elitism, this obfuscation of what the larger point that people that actually spoke out that are repulsed by what was happening nightly on the stage there, it is exactly why I never wanted to be around these people. Why they don't like me and I don't like them. And they can thumb their nose. Oh, don't they know that we open champagne and caviar and we lay out our little blankets in the Central Park in New York and we have caviar and then we watch the profound nature and the subtlety of the message of Julius Caesar in the modern age by putting in a Trump surrogate to get murdered in the place of Julius Caesar betrayed by Brute. I can't stand them. And that's what you just heard. You heard arrogance. You heard elitism. You heard a This is D.C., New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles. Not everybody. And the rest of us are low-life scum, uneducated masses that happen to do all the living and fighting and manufacturing and all the things that matter to me in my life. And so I really look at it as a badge of honor, hearing that today. And I look at it as a badge of honor because they don't know me. They will never understand me. This past election to me was never about any one personality, because I know this, and I said it every day for a year on purpose, repeating myself so that the message would get through, that if you are listening 1 hour a day, you'd know it by heart, that we have 13 million more Americans on food stamps because snobbery, elitism, and liberal activism failed us in the form of Obama's presidency. 50 million Americans on food stamps is a national disgrace. 8 million more in poverty in the United States of America, 50 million total, is a national disgrace. The lowest labor participation rate since the 70s is a national disgrace. The lowest home ownership rate in 51 years is a disgrace. The worst recovery since the 40s is a disgrace. The 1 in 6 American men in their prime working years, 18 to 34, can't get a job and living in mommy and daddy's basement or in jail is a disgrace. A president that can't say radical Islam for fear of retribution and angering those that are already at war with us is a disgrace. So for me, when a candidate said, I want to get those people out of poverty, off of food stamps, and back in the labor force, and I want to get them to the point they can buy their first house, and I'm going to do it by opening up energy so we're energy independent and we don't have to rely on countries that hate our guts for the lifeblood of our economy. And then I'm going to lower corporate tax rates because then they'll invest in factories and manufacturing centers in Milwaukee and elsewhere, and we'll get Americans back to work. And then I'm going to allow multinational corporations to bring trillions back at a really low rate so we can even put more Americans back to work. Then I'm going to secure our borders for national security reasons, and because we don't want millions of other people sneaking in anymore and taking Americans' jobs at half the salaries Americans will work for. And we're also going to identify radical Islam. And if you come from a Sharia country that kills gays and lesbians, abuses women, Christians and Jews, we're not going to deal with that either. And you've got to prove that you're worthy and safe to be here. It was the agenda I supported. And everything that can be done to undermine him, this president, is being done. And it's being done by snotty little arrogant brats like Joe and Mika, a bunch of overpaid, low-rated, low-skilled, arrogant, out-of-touch New York elitists, D.C. elitists, and all of their friends. That is the difference between me and them. And I couldn't be prouder. We got a lot to get to tonight. Quick break, right back. We'll continue. Hey, with optimism once again on the rise in America, the working people of this country are more important than ever. Well, now they have a podcast that celebrates them and tells their stories. On the Job, From Hired to Retired. Well, it's a new podcast from our friends at Express Employment Professionals that digs into the lives of men and women at work and explores their journeys as they fight to make the American dream a reality. On the Job takes the listener through the ups and downs of making a living in America. Now check out the new podcast, On the Job, From Hired to Retired, on iHeartRadio, iTunes, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Or just go to expresspros.com/podcast for more information. You know, Linda, if you've gone to see Shakespeare in the Park, you live in New York City and drinking champagne and a little caviar, and did you see Joe and Mika holding hands on a blanket and, of course, signing autographs for all of the masses that came up and said, oh, we so appreciate your lovely work every day. Thank you for standing up to this boorish man in the White House.
I wonder how much they paid them to show up there and get in line to get those autographs. It must have cost them a pretty penny.
Listen, I got to be honest. We live in a world where there's Republican congressmen being targeted for assassination, where you have so-called comedians holding up in their ISIS best style ISIS pose, severed heads of a president. We live in an age that, oh, do you not know Shakespeare? Is that the answer to the violent rhetoric, the dehumanizing, objectifying, demonization, lying, black helicopter conspiracy, you know, the Russia Trump collusion truthers like Joe and Mika and their entire freaking network over there?
Well, you see, there's people in America that instead of worrying about to be or not to be, they're worried about to eat or not to eat. So maybe that's the line they should get a hold of.
To eat or not to eat. That's what Hannity cares about.
Exactly.
You know what? Because I'm a low-life, uneducated scum. It matters not that I did well in college. Not is not that I've read Dante's Inferno and Pilgrim's Progress and the Harvard classics. I've never met people that disgust me, like these people that are so vile that they use this art excuse and this sort of phony intellectual superiority about, oh, do you not know Shakespeare? I don't think the average person gives a rip about Shakespeare if you can't feed your family.
I bet the average person knows more about the Constitution than any of these liberal jerks.
It's, you know, so true. And the American people were smart enough to elect that which they chose not to elect because they knew Hillary was a crook, a felon, guilty, liar, you know, somebody that just in her core was beyond incorrigible. And yet they just so need to justify this never Trumper attitude of these people and et cetera. I don't know. Maybe I am a different person. And that's what I realized when I heard that today. I'm not them. I don't want to be them. Instinctively, I've always known I don't like those people. And I think it is so insulting to the average intelligence of the average American that works their ass off every day to provide all the goods and services that we want, need, and desire that has created a standard of living second to none, that government has impeded their progress every step of the way, ruining their schools, making them pay more for energy, creating job opportunities abroad because we're stupid at times. They want the fundamentals first. Then we'll find time for Shakespeare, Pilgrim's Progress, Dante's Inferno, and we can have all the Shakespeare in the park. But holding up severed heads and assassinating in a play, in artistic form, you know, the president of the United States repulses me. And those people that mock the average American suffering because of their freaking stupidity nauseates me. So I guess I'm not part of that group anymore, right? Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying. You're above and beyond that.
I'm so happy. All right, the other news of the day, including the conspiracy theory of the week, straight ahead.
It is a weird tension. I think it's a dangerous time for the First Amendment and for the free press in this country. And at the same time, we're oddly influential with the guy who wants to kill us.
And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything, you. But this is the hallmark of revolution. Yes, I'm angry. Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
You know, I had a dream the other night about that I was playing golf with Donald Trump and I was standing beside him with a club in my hand and I was, you know, considering my options when I suddenly woke up. You know, it was one of those dreams where you want to just get back to sleep so you can finish it. You know?
That was pretty good. I might have to put Mr. Burgess on Fox News. I'll put Mr. Burgess up against Sean Hannity. He'll tear him up. I need you to go out and talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors. I want you to talk to them whether they're independent or whether they are Republican. I want you to argue with them and get in their face.
Press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish we were in high school. I could take him behind the gym. That's what I wish.
What we've got to do is fight in Congress, fight in the courts, fight in the streets, fight online, fight at the ballot box. And now there's the momentum to be able to do this.
This is a death panel bill because people will die. This is deadly. This is deadly.
You can't stand him.
I am.
He's the most horrible man I've ever seen in my life. Your president is a dishonorable, lying man.
Ordinary people who simply saw what needed to be done and came together and supported those ideals who have made the difference. They've marched. They've bled. Yes, some of them have died. This is hard. Every good thing is. We have done this before. We can do this again.
I don't respect this president. I don't trust this president. He's not working in the best interest of the American people. His motives and his actions are contemptible. And I will fight every day until he is impeached. Impeach 45. Impeach 45.
As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Oh, Ivanka's going to be our saving grace. You know, when he's about to nuke Finland or something, she's going to walk into the bedroom and, you know,
yeah,
daddy, don't do it, daddy. Yeah.
I mean, he's so blatantly stupid. He's a punk. He's a dog. He's a pig. He's a con, a bull artist, a mutt who doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't do his homework, doesn't care, thinks he's gaming society, doesn't pay his taxes. He's an idiot. Colin Powell said it best. He's a national disaster. He's an embarrassment to this country. It makes me so angry that this country has gotten to this point, that this fool, this bozo, has wound up where he has. He talks how he wants to punch people in the face. Well, I'd like to punch him in the face.
And I might just kill ISIS with the same ice pick that I murdered Donald Trump in the same night with.
Which enemy are you most proud of?
Probably the Republicans.
All right, 24 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program? Oh, okay, that's all right, all of that. All of that hatred. All of that vitriol. All of these vile, vile instances. Look, if you can't see, fathom, understand what delegitimization is all about. How often have we heard about, well, we can't objectify people? Well, what are they doing to this president? What do they do to Republicans every election season? Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. I mean, it just, it's granny over the cliff, dirty air, dirty water. You see what's happening here? Propaganda, distortion, misinformation. You know, you add to all of this, then you have James Comey. He leaks for the very specific purpose of getting a special counsel. And you have Rosenstein, who wrote the memo to fire Comey for all these legitimate reasons, enabling Comey's best buddy, BFF, Robert Mueller, to become the special counsel. And then they start with Russia-Trump collusion, but now we heard this weekend that there never was any collusion between Trump and the Russians. So you've got this whole Russia-Trump collusion, you know, truther movement that exists, and it all exists on NBC, where don't they know the meaning of Shakespeare? Gosh, the unwashed masses, gosh. And then you have, but they won't pay attention to Loretta Lynch, meeting on the tarmac with Bill Clinton just before she's about to decide the fate of his wife for 45 minutes discussing grandchildren, or they won't talk about her influence of Comey. It's not an investigation. It's just a matter. Felonies committed. It's only a matter that she destroyed evidence. Only a matter that she put her email server with top secret classified special access program information in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet. That five at least foreign intelligence agencies were able to hack into and rob all of our top secrets. It just doesn't matter. It's only mere matter. Or that what Sarah Carter, who will join us later in the program, talks about Comey confronting Loretta Lynch on the issue of, well, did you tell these people that you had put the kibosh on any possibility of an indictment of Hillary, that you're on Team Hillary? And she says nothing. But that's not an obstruction of justice case. Just like, you know, if you really want obstruction, why isn't Loretta Lynch now under investigation for obstruction of justice, putting the kibosh on an investigation or possible indictment of Hillary and being on Team Hillary or meeting with Bill or saying, please don't say it's an investigation. The talking points are this. It's a matter. Or what about real felonies committed by Hillary? You're not allowed to store, you know, mishandling of classified information is a felony. Destroying documents, classified information, is a felony. You know, well, but the legal standard is, of course, that extreme negligence, gross negligence. Well, Comey even admitted she was extremely careless. So what is the difference between the legal standard and what his conclusion was? Not much. You want to know about a real Russia conspiracy theory that is in truth real? How about Hillary, Secretary of State, signing a waiver that allows Vladimir, you know, the same guy that Obama said,
"No, Medvedev, you got to tell Vladimir, please,
my
please.
Election,
my last election.
Yeah, after my election, I have more flexibility.
I'll have more flexibility.
Yeah. I transmit this information.
I'll have more flexibility after my election.
You tell Vladimir that. Or that the Uranium One sign-off by then-Secretary of State Hillary benefited the Clinton Foundation to the tune of millions of dollars, and it took the foundational material for nuclear weapons, uranium, and 20% of America's uranium is now in the hands of Vladimir Putin. Nah, let's not investigate any of that. And now we're going to start out, Comey is going to leak and get the special counsel, and the special counsel is going to be his best buddy, his BFF, and Rosenstein, who made the case to fire Comey, is going to help in the appointment of Mueller, and then you've got the three of them there, but they found, even as Devin Nunes said, and even this weekend, what's his name, the Democrat, Adam Schiff, he said, no evidence of collusion. None.
Go back to the collusion and the evidence. I know you can't talk about specific evidence, but he says Dianne Feinstein has said there's no evidence of collusion. So collusion between whom? Can you tell us that?
Well, the allegation, of course, is that the Russians in the hacking and dumping of documents in the election had essentially relationships with Trump campaign people and coordinated those efforts. Now, the FBI opened an investigation into that issue in July, well before Congress did. I think they did that for good reason in July. I think they maintain that investigation. It's ongoing for good reason as well. But I'm not prepared to say that there's proof you could take to a jury. But I can say that there is enough that we ought to be investigating.
Investigating it. All right. But now, Comey and Mueller. Now, Mueller ends up hiring, let's see, Hillary Clinton's attorney, who worked on the Clinton Foundation case, you know, the millions of dollars funneled to the Clinton Foundation, and 20% of uranium goes to Vladimir, and Bill Clinton doubles his speaking fees in Moscow. And then, let's see, Mueller hires Clinton's former attorney, who was trying to prevent Americans from discovering the truth and preventing Freedom of Information Act requests. And then he hires 13 other lawyers. And then he hires people that even have a history of going way beyond what the rules and regulations are all about. And then he hires Clinton donors and Obama donors. This is a witch hunt. And then, by the way, let's get all these lawyers in here that we know. Well, we'll start at Trump-Russia collusion, but that case has now fallen apart in part because of Comey's testimony and no evidence after 11 months. And never mind the Russia-Trump collusion truther movement on NBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC. And let's just continue to lie about the president on all of these issues. And now that we can't get him on Russia-Trump collusion because it doesn't exist, well, the next thing we're going to do is, well, we'll just go after the president for obstructing. But the obstruction is he fired Comey, which Comey in his own letter says he had the right to do at any point that he wants, and he serves at the pleasure of the president. So and Rosenstein is involved in this investigation into obstruction because the president fired Comey, but it was based on his recommendation. Do you understand how insane? So we'll move from Russia, Trump. Now we'll advance it, what I call mission creep, investigative creep. Now we'll look at obstruction, and then we'll look into the financial matters of Jared Kushner. But boy, we're not gonna spend all this time and money and not justify our existence and get somebody for something, even if it ends up being 3 years down the road and somebody doesn't remember some fact that, you know, from 2 years ago or during the campaign, and they got a piece of paper that shows that they didn't remember it 100% accurately, or maybe they misled them in some way. So let's get them and put up a perjury trap, and we'll get somebody just like Scooter Libby. That's how insane this is. And we've got a whole Russia, Trump, truth or conspiracy, you know, network out there that is designed to get the president. It is unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable. And all of these people should be out. And meanwhile, what are we missing? Let's see, a list of people to be assassinated. Mo Brooks, Jeff Duncan, Trent Franks. And Fox News reported the story that Jim Jordan, Tennessee representative, Virginia representative Morgan Griffin, were also on the list. Jim Jordan's a personal friend of mine. By the way, I've always known and liked Steve Scalise a lot. Good guy. But the list of attacks of conservatives are mind-numbing. And while Steve Scalise lies in a hospital, what does MSNBC, the Truther Network, the Russian Trump Truther Network, they say, oh, well, he's an extremist while he's lying, fighting for his life in a hospital bed. Isn't that nice of NBC to do that? By the way, people thought I was taking shots at Megyn Kelly on Twitter. I wasn't. I was just saying I've lived through edited fake news with Ted Koppel. He interviews me for 50 some odd minutes, releases a minute, 7 seconds, and makes himself look as good as possible. And I said, release the tape. So I'm saying NBC, release the tape. It has nothing to do with Megyn Kelly. She wants to interview, you know, Alex Jones. Let the people decide. Let people make decisions. We don't have, you know, with online capabilities, we don't have to just go with the 11-minute edited version. This is a beef that I have with networks, not with Megyn Kelly. So those of you trying to create a fight between me and Megyn, it's not happening. My fight is with networks that, you know, don't use the capacity they have to tell the American people the whole truth. So you got the Trump-Russia collusion. And, you know, we're not focused on the economy. We're not focused on getting people to work out of poverty off of food stamps. We're not focused on people owning homes. We got a big story. Russia's now literally threatening U.S. jets in Syria as targets after Americans had to gun down the first Syrian regime warplane. And the president has to spend his time day in and day out, 75% of it, not focused on the economy, not focused on his agenda, not focused on anything else but Russia, Russia, Russia. And then once Russia is proven false, then we've got to move on to obstruction, obstruction, obstruction. And then once obstruction is disproved, which the guy that recommended the firing of Comey is now the one saying we've got to look into it. That makes a lot of sense. And then after that, we'll move into finances, finances, finances. And there's never any end to this crap. I've never seen it. Anything like it. And by the way, when you add up all of the money that the Department of Justice, Wilmer Hale, have donated to Hillary versus Trump, oh, it's 97% versus 3%. It's insane. And they may be successful in the end. They may be. So we won't focus on assassination lists. We're not going to focus in on important issues like, oh, let's see, Syria is threatening to shoot down our planes. We're not going to focus in on getting people to work and out of poverty and off of food stamps. We're not going to focus in on energy independence. We're not going to focus on saving the educational system. We're going to yell at conservatives that actually finally said enough with the assassination crap, enough with the phony Julius Caesar assassinations and ISIS poses of Americans or all the other Americans threatening to hurt the president. Now, we're going to ignore all of that. But I tell you, if Julius Caesar in the park was about, and I know Obama 2012, I got it. But nobody talked about that play. It's so disgusting. These are horrible times we're living in. All right, loaded up today. All right, so Laura Loomer of Rebel.com, she was arrested Friday night because she dared to protest the nightly mock assassination of Julius Caesar. Caesar in the park, Shakespeare in the park. I thought this was all part of the, you know, the whole movement in the country that's called resistance. She'll join us. Newt Gingrich joins us. And, of course, Sarah Carter on why aren't we looking into Loretta Lynch's obstruction? That and more.
So what are the charges against Trump?
Let's talk about Rosenstein. You talked to the president. Why is he, or was he, in that tweet, publicly calling out his deputy attorney general? Has he lost confidence in him?
I think he's furious. I think Trump sits there and says, let me get this straight. I know I didn't do anything with the Russians. Comey has said three times I didn't do anything with the Russians. Nobody on Capitol Hill has any proof I did anything with the Russians. And now I get an independent counsel who's going to mess up at least the next year at a minimum, and who, by the way, you'll notice is expanding his charge. I mean, now they're talking about not the Russians, they're talking about obstruction. Now they're talking about going and looking at financial files, if you believe the leak. And I said yesterday, you get two more leaks like this, Rosenstein's going to have to appoint a special counsel to investigate the special counsel.
Go back to the collusion and the evidence. I know you can't talk about specific evidence, but he says Dianne Feinstein has said there's no evidence of collusion. So collusion between whom? Can you tell us that?
Well, the allegation, of course, is that the Russians in the hacking and dumping of documents in the election had essentially relationships with Trump campaign people and coordinated those efforts. Now, the FBI opened an investigation into that issue in July, well before Congress did. I think they did that for good reason in July. I think they maintain that investigation. It's ongoing for good reason as well. But I'm not prepared to say that there's proof you could take to a jury. But I can say that there is enough that we ought to be investigating.
Isn't it true, Mr. Comey, that your salary went from $206,000 in 2002 when you were a government employee to $33.5 million in 2012, and that you have been employed or earned these monies while working for entities that were major contributors to the Clintons? Isn't it true that you worked for Bridgewater and Associates between 2010 and 2013, and that Bridgewater and Associates is also a major contributor to the Clintons? Isn't it true that you worked for Columbia University in 2013 as a senior research scholar at the School of Law, and that Columbia University is also a major contributor to the Clintons? Mr. Comey, you were appointed FBI director by former President Obama in 2013. As Secretary Clinton was leaving the State Department. Isn't it true they were appointed by the former president as FBI director because you had proven yourself to be of service to the Clintons and their associates and entities that contribute millions of dollars to the Clintons, nonprofit organizations? Isn't it true that you, Mr. Comey, as the director of the FBI in 2013 did absolutely nothing in regards to the missing $2 billion from the State Department finances? And this happened while Mrs. Clinton was the Secretary of State.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN. A lot to absorb from there, not the least of which is Adam Schiff. No evidence of collusion. And then, of course, the appointment of 13 lawyers, one of which was Clinton's attorney on the issue of the foundation and preventing the public from getting Freedom of Information Act requests. And then, of course, you have top donors to Clinton and Obama on the list appointed by Mueller. I mean, does it get any more frustrating? Then you have James Comey. He leaks information to get a special counsel. The special counsel, then we have the deputy attorney general. Then we bring in Mueller. And the deputy attorney general had written a two-page memo why Comey needs to go. And then, as Newt Gingrich said, okay, well, now we're not investigating collusion anymore. Let's move on to other things, what I kept calling investigative creep last week. Let's move on to financial issues. Let's move on to obstruction. Let's move on to this and that. When does it ever end? Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich is with us. His brand new book, Understanding Trump, has been number one since its release. An amazing, probably, I think, the second biggest book you've ever had. And congratulations. It's on Amazon and bookstores everywhere.
Thank you. It's doing really, really well, and we're very pleased with it. You know, I've been doing some more research after yesterday. I watched the various talk shows on Sunday morning, and the news media is shifting from the old American rule that you're innocent until proven guilty. They've found a new rule for Trump, which is he's guilty until he's proven innocent. And in show after show, people would say, look, there's no evidence of collusion. There's no evidence of this. There's no evidence of that. And the host would say, yeah, but what if someday there is? I mean, it was just an amazing demonstration. But I came up, Sean, with some research that I think you're going to find fascinating. We looked at, because people say to me, why am I worried about Mueller and what's changed my opinion? Because initially I was fairly favorable to him. So I'm going to give you four numbers that the audience will find intriguing. If you look at the Department of Justice, people there gave Hillary Clinton $286,797. They gave Donald Trump $8,756, basically 97% to Hillary, 3% to Trump. And that was pretty bad, and I thought I told you about the culture at the Department of Justice. Now we find that Bob Mueller, the new special counsel, came from a law firm called WilmerHale, and the numbers are even worse. WilmerHale, as a group, gave $326,798 to Clinton. They only gave $628 to Trump. That's 0.19%. I mean, think about that. It is just breathtaking.
Let me go to the whole idea here, because this is so key. So you have Comey, who obviously is so outraged that he thinks it's obstruction, but he didn't have the courage. If he was strong enough, he would have walked out of the room, and if he was strong enough, he would have followed 18 U.S.C. 4, and he would have reported it, except, well, he thought that the attorney general may recuse themselves weeks down the road, so why would he do it? But he wasn't strong enough, but he believed it could have been. He believed he was being pressured as it relates to General Flynn. So he leaks information in the New York Times for the very purpose of getting a special counsel. Then you have Rosenstein, who recommended Comey's firing in a two-page harsh memo. Then you've got the appointment of Mueller, who now is taking on Clinton's attorneys and top donors to Clinton and Obama. And I'm saying, and you're right about mission creep or investigation creep. I don't even know what's happening here. At this point, this is like an under any, by any means necessary, take Trump out.
Well, and I'm the Republicans are kind of sleepwalking. Let me point out, by the way, if you combine the Department of Justice and the WilmerHale contributions, it is $613,000 for Clinton and $9,000 for Trump. Now, if I just told you there was a group that split 613,000 to 9, wouldn't you expect them to have a bias?
Yes, and they do. I want to ask you this question in light of now we know a list of congressmen, they were specifically being targeted. In other words, an assassination list was found on this guy James Hodkinson's body. And on the list were people you know, Mo Brooks in Alabama, Alabama, Jeff Duncan, Trent Franks, for example, and many others. Reporting the same thing. It's about six Republicans. He asked Duncan and two others, are these Republicans? Yeah, then he goes on the shooting rampage. Now, we've saw some disobedience this week, nonviolent, where people, where the Shakespeare in the Park play was closing out, I guess, where people literally said, stop the violence against, or the desensitization, if you will, of violence against the sitting president. This on the heels of a severed head, bloodied face of the president being held in ISIS style. This on top of rhetoric we've never heard before. On top of 11 months of black helicopter conspiracy theories by almost every network. When you put this all together, it seems like there is an atmosphere of the left so unhinged that we're now seeing it emerge in other forms. Am I right in that analysis?
Yeah, I think you are right, and I think it all goes back to election night and to the period between 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock that night. You know, about 8 o'clock, everybody was confident that Hillary Clinton was going to win. All of the liberals were happy. They were going to continue the Obama mission of using government to radicalize America. They were going to continue to weaken America so that we could not endanger the world. They were going to have liberal Supreme Court justices. 3 hours later, their worst nightmares coming true. This, I mean, I think they might have been a little more passive if Jeb Bush or John Kasich had won, but they were getting, you know, Donald J. Trump, and it was driving them crazy. And I believe for a large part of the left, they have never gotten over the catharsis of that moment and the shattering speed with which they went from victory to defeat. And I think that's what you're seeing. And it's now metastasizing, and every week they become more radical, more confrontational. I have college students all the time who tell me that they feel genuinely oppressed on campus because it is so dangerous to be overtly a Republican or overtly a supporter of Donald Trump.
Well, I have one of the people that went on the stage. By the way, peacefully, nobody got hurt. I wouldn't support any type of violent disruption. But I do think that a message was being sent by people that see that the presidency is being diminished. The office of the presidency is being diminished by this nonstop harassment and attacks. You know, and you even took it as far over the weekend. And I agree with you that somebody's going to end up going to jail, not over Trump-Russia collusion, over whatever investigative creep they end up, you know, fixating on, or if a perjury trap is finally set 3 years into this. For somebody that doesn't completely remember a series of events that happened years earlier.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to believe that this collection of left-wing lawyers, high-powered, very expensive, are going to leave their jobs for 6 months or a year and go home without a trophy. I mean, I think it's almost like a Western movie where, you know, they're now on the warpath and they've got to get a couple scalps. And I don't think they're going to get Donald J. Trump, but if I were anyone near him, needs to be aware that you are in danger of getting set up by these lawyers. And two of the lawyers have a tradition, they have a track record of hiding information from the defense and of rigging the case in ways. In one case, they were repudiated 9-0 by the Supreme Court. but by the time the court ruled, they had destroyed a company with 85,000 employees.
Unbelievable. All right, Newt Gingrich is with us. A few more moments with him on the other side of this. His brand-new book, Understanding Trump, it's on Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. And one of his biggest bestsellers to date, an insider's look into why this man was able to overcome all these odds and be successful. And, of course, this unprecedented hatred towards him. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, toll-free. Our telephone number is 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. Laura Loomer with Rebel.com was arrested Friday night. She was one of the people that peacefully went to the stage at this Shakespeare in the Park. Is this dangerous? One, the rhetoric that's being used. Two, the symbolism of a severed head, ISIS pose, bloodied face of a president. Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, let's kill a Trump lookalike. Now, some people say, well, that happened to Obama in 2012. It was never near an issue like this is today. How do you compare rhetoric to action?
Well, let me say, first of all, I thought it was very telling that even after the shooting on Wednesday, the people doing the play in New York couldn't put a black wig on their version of Caesar. I mean, it wouldn't have been that hard to simply say, look, well, let us prove to you this is not about Trump. We're going to put the guy in a black wig. He won't even look like Trump. They couldn't even bring themselves to do that. And I think it just tells you how determined they are to be outrageous and to be anti-Trump. I do think that the rhetoric is getting more intense, but I would remind you that, and this is something you used to talk about during the Obama years, that Obama had some friends who went around the country bombing people. And the period of the peak of the Vietnam War struggle, there was probably even more tension than there is now. And I think you get into these cycles where there are really big issues at stake and where emotions start building. And of course, on the left, it's very ironic. The people who talk about bullying are the bullies. They're the people who are the most likely on campuses and in other settings to tell you to shut up. And I think that part of what is driving them crazy is that you can't shut Donald Trump up, that he's fearless. He's going to do what he believes in. And I think that is part of what is keeping his base with him. And I think that he's actually starting to turn a corner and rebuild that base in a way that if I were the left, I'd be very worried about.
What do you make of the Georgia 6 tomorrow, which is such a big deal in this sense? I mean, it's not a seat that would normally be in play. It's your old district, but it's been, I think, redistricted since. But what is your take on the importance of tomorrow?
I mean, first of all, unless you look at the total amount, which one analyst told me they thought was $50 million, that has been spent by the Democrats, you can't appreciate why this is a race. But if you spend $50 million in one district, you're going to have an impact, and that's basically what has kept the Democrat propped up, is that they spent so much out-of-state money in such huge quantities. I think Karen Handel has come on very strong. She's a Republican. She's lived in the district. Ironically, her opponent, the Democrat, doesn't even live in the district, cannot vote for himself tomorrow. If he loses by one vote, it'll be him.
That, by the way, is hilarious to me.
Yeah, and I think that Handel's made a very good case. I mean, she's gone right at the notion that the Democrat ultimately is going to be with the Nancy Pelosi's and the Elizabeth Warren's and the Chuck Schumer's, and that those are not values Georgians have. And my guess is, as of now, and I was talking to Randy Evans, who is one of the people I trust most on Georgia politics, he believes she will probably win by 52-47, and then that, of course, would be a huge victory. If she does win after this much money being spent, having also won in Kansas and in Montana in recent specials, I predict if she does win that the Democrats will go into a very deep depression. And
I think
really
you're right.
Be desperate about what they need to do.
Listen, I know Randy for years. If he says so, I trust him. But that should not give anybody comfort until they go vote in the Georgia 6
look,
for tomorrow. But
the easy message for every Republican in the 6th District
vote.
Is go vote.
Yeah. By the way, and I love the Democrat can't vote for himself. Newt Gingrich's brand new book, Understanding Trump, Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. We'll see you tonight on TV. We have a very important opening monologue tonight. When we come back, Laura Loomer, Rebel.com, arrested Friday night. She stormed the stage at Shakespeare in the Park, a peaceful protest in response to this nightly assassination of a Trump lookalike. That's next.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to take a second to hear the immortal Bob Grant's thoughts about the world today.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's sick and it's getting sicker.
Now, back to the Sean Hannity Show.
Freedom. Stop criminalization of political violence. This is unacceptable. You cannot
get off the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause. We're going to pause. Security.
This is violent.
Security, please.
Play will I disrobe the images if you do find them there.
Nazi.
F- you Nazi.
I'm a journalist.
F- you, you're not a journalist.
Yes, I am.
F- you, you're not a journalist.
How do you know which side I'm on?
F- you, you're not a journalist if you're acting like this.
Acting like
f- you. F- you.
I just want the f- truth.
You. F- you.
I'm not a journalist if I want the f- truth.
You.
I'm just here documenting f- sides.
F- you.
Why are you so angry at me?
F- you.
Why are you so angry?
The fascist journalists are the worst. F- you.
Who's a fascist? I'm
you
not.
Are f-
How am I a fascist?
You.
How am I a fascist?
You're a Nazi.
I filmed your side first, and then I filmed them.
All right, that last part was from the, over the weekend, an anti-Sharia rally that took place in Tennessee. Before that, there were a number of instances that began on Friday night where conservatives, sick and tired of the nightly Trump lookalike getting assassinated during Shakespeare in the Park, this Julius Caesar rendition of theirs every single night. And this, of course, following the ISIS pose of Kathy Griffin. This, of course, following endless conspiracy theories, black helicopter, Trump-Russia collusion. And as I mentioned in the last half hour in the at the beginning of the program, never happened. Never. In other words, even Adam Schiff is now acknowledging, on top of all the intelligence people, on top of all of the Democrats we've been telling you about, on top of rhetoric, insanity, and, of course, the list of congressmen to be assassinated and the shooting that took place last week that brought Steve Scalise, the House Majority Whip, to within an inch of his life. Now, the first person to take to the stage was Laura Loomer. She, it turns out, works for Rebel.com. She was arrested Friday night after going on stage, calling out these people for this nightly assassination of this Trump lookalike, and she joins us now. How are you?
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm good. By the way, the first thing I want to point out to people is you were not violent. You'd never hit anybody. You never threatened anybody. All you did was say, this has got to stop, correct?
Correct. I was not violent. I was peaceful. I did not resist police when they were detaining me. And it was a completely peaceful protest.
Okay. And what motivated you to do this? Because, you know, it's funny because I saw what you did. And like you, I feel that the level of rhetoric and the incendiary nature of the dialogue is gotten so poisonous. I just now people say, well, in 2012, they had a play and Obama was the one that was killed off Hannity. When did you speak out then? It was never as big an issue as it is now. But anyway, go ahead. So what made you want to do this?
Well, I'm a conservative. I'm an American. I'm a constitutionalist. And I am supportive of what Donald Trump is doing right now to make America great again. Right? And while Donald Trump is trying to make America great again, he has experienced an unbelievable amount of hatred and vitriol from the left. There has been an increased amount of violence against conservatives that has become normalized in the mainstream liberal media. And I just had enough. I'm not going to sit back anymore and watch conservatives stay silent and take abuse and potentially just wait and watch a assassination attempt against Donald Trump.
Well, we saw last week that what happened last week with the targeted list of Republicans and the Steve Scalise shooting and the shooting of all these other people, did that also cause you to take a stand here?
Yes. When I saw that it was a Bernie Sanders supporter who was inspired by people like Rachel Maddow and others to commit this act of violence against Representative Scalise, I said I've had enough. And it is because of mainstream political violence that is perpetuated in this reproduction of Julius Caesar and things like Kathy Griffin decapitating President Trump that motivated me to protest the play. And so that's what I did. And I decided to use my constitutional right of free speech and peaceful protest to uphold my moral obligation to protect the right and my president against violent attacks.
One of the things I pointed out on Twitter today, I mean, like you, because I actually think that what you and others have done here is sending a very loud message that this is so over the top, so outrageous, that, you know, I pointed out that, you know, if it was as big an issue, like in the case of 2012 with Obama, or if this was about a historical religious figure, you pick anyone you would want, wouldn't the left be going insane? Wouldn't there be calls to knock it off, et cetera?
Exactly. There's such a double standard and there's selective outrage, really. I was thinking to myself, what would happen if conservatives decided to portray the Prophet Muhammad as Julius Caesar, right? We see how they react when we depict the Prophet Muhammad in our own ways that we perceive him. They would have gone crazy. And I guarantee you the show would have ended in a blast and it would have been one time only. There wouldn't have been multiple disruptions because they wouldn't have allowed for another disruption to take place.
Let me talk a little bit about what happened when you were arrested. Did they treat you fine? How were you treated?
Well, the police officers who took me in, they were nice, they were gentle. And then when I got to the station and people were talking to me, they agreed with me. And they said, look, I'm not supposed to say this because I'm in uniform, but I support you 100%. And when a couple of the officers left the room, an officer came in and showed me that Story was at the top drudge. And he said, I support you. Thank you very much. I stand with you. And, and when my friends protested yesterday and shut down the play.
Did you have this coordinated or you don't want to tell me? You don't have to. I mean, was it coordinated or was this sort of spontaneous on their part? Did you start a movement, in other words?
They said it themselves to the media that I inspired them through my actions for them to protest the play again. And I know these people. I know Jovi. I know South.
Well, you knew you were going to get arrested. You knew that this wasn't going to end in a good way, but you did it anyway, right?
Yeah, because you have to make a sacrifice. I mean, I knew that getting arrested was a possibility, but I would rather get arrested than watch my president get assassinated.
All right. Here's what I want to ask you. Now, so when you're taken and you're booked and you're charged, how long were you there and what did they charge you with?
I was in jail behind bars for about 2.5 hours and I'm being charged with trespassing and disorderly conduct.
Okay. And I guess you have to hire a lawyer for all that. Well, what's the status of your case and when do you go to court, for example?
So Rebel Media, my boss, Ezra Levant, he has hired a legal counsel for me. I have a court date on August 14th. And right now there's a legal defense set up for me to, you can support me and my legal fees because it is going to be expensive to hire lawyers. It's freelaura.com at the Rebel Media. And, that's the status right now. I'm just waiting for my court date on August 14th.
Yeah. Now, how do you respond? Because, listen, I didn't even bother responding on Twitter to all these stupid people. Well, do you even know the story of Julius Caesar? That's irrelevant to me. But when you see congressmen targeted for assassination and when you see a so-called, comedian with an ISIS pose holding up a head of a bloodied, severed head of a president, and the rhetoric on top of all of it that we have chronicled and conspiracy theories, thousands of hours of conspiracy theories on TV. My fear is this, is that we see it, Laura, every election cycle. Republicans are demonized as somebody that are racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. It goes on and on. And they want to poison the air and water and throw granny over a cliff. And over time, it does have a way of sort of desensitizing or delegitimizing and even demonizing those that have legitimate political opposition into a caricature that they are not. And I feel that this has now happened since November the 9th. And unfortunately, sane people are never going to buy into this, and other people are going to see it for what it is. But there is a group of people out there that are already vulnerable to suggestion and propaganda and misinformation. And you never know how they're going to react to any of this. Now, I always blame the person that commits the act. I really do. I'm not going to fall into the trap of Bill Clinton blaming Rush Limbaugh on talk radio for the Oklahoma City bombing. But the level of incendiary rhetoric and demonization is hit, I think, an all-time high. And that's the danger.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Look, some say this is Julius Caesar. I call it assassination porn. right? This was assassination porn. This is a bastardization of Shakespeare, right? So what they have done is they have turned the original play of Julius Caesar, which was a tragedy, into a comedy, right? So that is a bastardization of this classic. So anybody who is saying, oh, go read the play, well, how about you stop bastardizing Shakespeare, right? Shakespeare once said that violent delights have violent ends. And when you delight in, you know, violent acts that that encourage an assassination of the president, you are encouraging a violent
Laura,
end.
Is that you were being, haven't we heard since Election Day, the resistance, you were resisting, you know, the overt expression of violence against our president. You're only doing, I thought, what that which Democrats loved.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, all right. Well, see, Laura, you're going to join us on TV tonight. And if people missed it, we've got the video and we'll show everybody tonight. And thank you for what you did. I think taking a stand, peaceful protesting, made a very, very important point. And I think it ended up hopefully doing a lot of good. And we wish you the best and everything. We'll see you tonight on TV. Thank you for being with us.
See you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. All right,
as we continue, we have our news roundup information overload. Sarah Carter is going to weigh in on all of these issues involving Comey and Rosenstein and Mueller and the conflicts of interest and the attorneys that support Obama and Hillary. And, of course, even Hillary Clinton's own attorney is part of the team. And meanwhile, they avoid, obstruction of justice, Loretta Lynch. They avoid Hillary's felonies. You know, they avoid a conflict of interest with Comey. It's unbelievable. Everything's so upside down and backwards. Adrian is in New York City listening to the all-new AM 710 WOR. How are you, Adrian? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. Love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to tell you, I saw the Julius Caesar show a couple of weeks ago, and at the beginning they had two walls of graffiti on stage which they were trying to get people to come up and write stuff like, I can't talk to my family because of Trump anymore. It was called the Wall of Hope and the Wall of Mourning. Now, not only that, but they changed a lot of the text. At one point,
Trump's death.
One of the characters is supposed to say, if Caesar had slaughtered the mothers, they would still love him. So they changed it to, if Caesar would have slaughtered the mothers on Fifth Avenue. And those stupid sheep, they actually laughed at this. Can you imagine? Then they had the chorus, Brutus's armies, they were actually chanting, we're the people, we're united, we'll never be defeated, no justice, no peace. So they were doing all this propaganda. It was much more than just the bloody assassination of Trump. I mean, this was like a religious ritual of all the liberal fans just getting validated by for all their paranoia.
I think that's extraordinarily well said. And, you know, I go back. Well, in 2012, there was a play. Okay, but the country wasn't talking about it. And therein lies a huge distinction as it relates to Obama. And if I see one more person on Twitter tell me, I'm like, all right, I've talked about it last week. I understand. It's not my point, though. It was never that big an issue, never in an environment like this, never coming on the heels of targeted assassinations of Democrats. Never did I see a severed head of Obama held up, you know, the way Kathy Griffin of CNN did it. So I just I'm a little bit the fact that people are using this petty minutia to argue and justify the spoken violence, delegitimization, and frankly, dehumanizing effort of Trump is just not comparable to me. And it's extraordinarily dangerous. I don't silence anybody's speech, but you know what? If part of the resistance is a conservative every once in a while speaking up, oh, I'm sorry that there are peaceful conservative protesters. All right, we'll take a quick break. Sarah Carter investigates what we ought to be investigating, what has now become a witch hunt against the president, how mission creep, investigative creep is even bigger than I thought, and so much more. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free, telephone number. You want to be a part of the program as we continue our final hour free-for-all. Don't miss it, and your calls next hour.
The president tweeted earlier this week, I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt. So let me start with this. When did the president become aware that he was officially under investigation by the special counsel?
The president is not under investigation by the special counsel. The tweet from the president was in response to the five anonymous sources that were purportedly leaking information to the Washington Post about a potential investigation of the president. But the president, as James Comey said in his testimony, and as we know as of today, the president has not been and is not under investigation.
I go back to the tweet. Then why did he say he was? Yes. I mean, was this mistweeted? Are we not to take him at his word?
No, the president's tweet was in response to the Washington Post story. So the Washington Post issued a story that had five anonymous sources, which they never identified what agencies those sources originated out of. The response from the president, using social media, was about that story. But let me be very clear here, as it has been since the beginning.
Yeah.
The president is not and has not been under investigation for obstruction.
The president said last week he would release the tapes of, if there were tapes, of his conversation this week. That hasn't happened. Where is that?
I think the president is going to address that in the week ahead. There was a lot of issues this past week. The president gave a major address in Cuba. We had the assassination attempt of Steve Scalise. There were a lot of intervening factors. So the issue of the tapes, I think right now, was not priority issue number one when the country was facing an assassination attempt on Steve Scalise and other members of Congress and their staffs, by the way. And our thoughts and prayers still with them. I know he's still in a very difficult situation. But also, he gave a major address on the situation in Cuba and the attempt there to reconcile and redraft a policy that makes sense. So the president has a lot of issues, and I think this shows that the president is concentrating on governing. This issue will be addressed in due course, I suspect next week.
Go back to the collusion and the evidence. I know you can't talk about specific evidence, but he says Dianne Feinstein has said there's no evidence of collusion. So collusion between whom? Can you tell us that?
Well, the allegation, of course, is that the Russians in the hacking and dumping of documents in the election had essentially relationships with Trump campaign people and coordinated those efforts. Now, the FBI opened an investigation into that issue in July, well before Congress did. I think they did that for good reason in July. I think they maintain that investigation. It's ongoing for good reason as well. But I'm not prepared to say that there's proof you could take to a jury. But I can say that there is enough that we ought to be investigating.
All right, glad you're with us. News roundup and information overload. I still cannot believe now even Adam Schiff is now saying no evidence of collusion. And as we have been discussing, all right, so no evidence of collusion. You know what? Let's move on to some financial issues, and we'll let the special counsel leak that to the Washington Post with zero sources. Hey, maybe we'll look at the obstruction issue, even though Comey, of course, leaked to the New York Times to get his friend Mueller, special counsel Rosenstein, who made the case to fire Comey, is up to his eyeballs in all of this. So let's now have investigative creep. And let's bring up everything and throw everything against the wall and see if something at some point doesn't stick. I've never seen anything like this. And in the meantime, let's hire, as part of Mueller's team, let's hire Hillary Clinton's old lawyer at the Clinton Foundation. You know, the person that was trying to deny you, the American people, the right to see what it was that was going on there, fighting Freedom of Information Act requests. And then let's hire a bunch of Clinton donors. And then let's hire a bunch of Obama donors. And let's see if we just can't find something to get somebody indicted on. And maybe by the end of 2 or 3 years of this crap and stopping the president and his agenda and demonizing him and moving from one issue to another, assuming he's guilty, never the presumption of innocence, you know, maybe at some point we actually might end up with a Scooter Libby perjury trap, and maybe we can, you know, get somebody that can't remember every detail, or you find a paper that contradicts one little detail, and let's bring that person, let's throw the book at them. This is how obscene and absurd and corrupt and bankrupt this whole thing has become. Sarah Carter's with Circa News. You don't have to agree with everything I said, but am I factually wrong about any of this?
I think that you brought up a number of concerns, Sean.
By the way, Sarah is a real reporter, so I just want you to know what I just said to her. Am I wrong in any way? She's like saying, "Oh God, why do you put me in that position?"
Why?
I am a journalist. By the way, fair and balanced always. Go ahead.
But you know, let's talk about the facts here. I mean, these are the facts. We know that Quarles, Ray, and Weissman, those are three of the attorneys that Mueller hired, have donated more than $53,000 to Democrats since 1988. So we're if we're just looking at the facts here, I mean, these are concerns. These are legitimate concerns on the part of the administration, on the part of people that are looking at this. I mean, this isn't just a Republican concern. There have been Democrats out there making those same kind of statements. You know, there's a concern when you have a very one-sided, heavy special prosecutor. We've heard from a number of people, from people in the intelligence community down to Republicans and Democrats alike who have been briefed behind the scenes that there is no evidence of collusion between President Trump and Russia. And so now we see that the special counsel based on, you know, the special prosecution based on what Comey said is pushing for now an investigation on obstruction. So this appears to be what the military likes to call mission creep, right? We're trying to find something. Let's find something. Let's keep moving forward. But we have to ask the question, I mean, who are these people investigating the Trump administration? And if there is an enormous amount of bias here, people need to take a step back and really look at that. And there needs to be a real question as to whether or not some of these people should be recused.
Well, I think all of them should be recused. Mueller, there's no way Mueller's bringing in these sharks. None. No way. Not happening unless Mueller is serious about going in whatever direction he has to. You know, justifying the existence of hiring 13 lawyers now, including Clinton's old lawyer, including Obama and Hillary donors. It seems to me if there's no evidence of Russia collusion, how did we already move into another entire new topic of investigation?
It's the question that I'm asking. How did this happen? And I mean, we can see that even Comey himself eventually had to admit that he did tell the president on a number of occasions that the president was not part of an investigation. They didn't have any evidence that he had colluded with Russia. He was not under investigation, but somehow after he was fired, all of a sudden now he is under investigation. It's moved into
the investigation's supposed to be obstruction, or the firing of Comey's obstruction. Well, how about the guy? Isn't it the Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein? What role did he have in the appointment of Mueller?
Well, yes, of course. And we can see this. I mean, this is what we're looking at. A number of people with very close relationships from very early on. From very early on, we know that Comey and Mueller, Sean, have had a long, long relationship. That's of concern to a number of people. And believe me, a number of people within the FBI as well, who see this as kind of a collusion. Kind of, you want to talk about collusion, they say, look at the relationship between Mueller and Comey, and he can't be impartial. A lot of people that know them have told me, because he is too close to Comey, and he's not going to treat Comey impartially here. And so we have to ask ourselves, I think, as journalists, what are we looking at here? What's the real story? And I think John and I have tried to do that from the beginning. We talked about the leaks. We talked about the fact early on that there was no evidence of collusion between Trump and Russia. That was what we stated publicly. We also talked about that when it came to Michael Flynn. And remember, if we're looking at what the crimes are here, if we're looking at the crimes, it would be the leaking of information, a lot of which has been erroneous, to the Washington Post and to the New York Times. But the information that isn't erroneous is actually classified as a felony. Those leaks are considered classified information, should have never come out. And now we move to Loretta Lynch. And we know for a fact, based on Comey's testimony himself, that Loretta Lynch was getting involved in the investigation into Russia, asking them to call it a matter, not an investigation. And we know further that there was evidence collected by the FBI that stipulated that there was a possibility that Lynch told political appointees, persons that were close to Hillary Clinton, that she was going to put the kibosh on any investigation. So if there's anything to be looked at here, it would be that. Those would be the facts.
But how come we never get to that point, Sarah? Now, this is something, for example, we never got to the bottom of what happened with General Flynn. We never got to the bottom of what you have been able to point out. Loretta Lynch on the tarmac. Loretta Lynch, it's not an investigation. Loretta Lynch putting the kibosh on it. We never get to the bottom. We know Hillary committed felonies. Nothing. Now we're just going to make up whole cloth, new avenues of investigation for Trump when we know other crimes were committed. That to me is, I don't even know what to say about it, except that there is such a level of deep corruption My mind goes to the deep state. My mind goes to this whole underground sort of fourth branch of government, as I describe it. And I don't believe it's a conspiracy. I think it's just a fact that we now see. Where are these leaks coming from otherwise?
Well, they're coming from within very high-level officials within the government. And you're right, people that have been there, longtime bureaucrats, people most likely very close to Hillary Clinton. I think there was a stunning amount of shock when President Trump won the election. I know from people within the government that overheard conversations where people were extremely shocked at him winning, and people who were angry about this. So it appears that anger has come out full right, in full swing, with these leaks to the media and
all illegal.
Barrage.
All illegal. All right, stay right there. Sarah Carter, Circuit News, at the bottom of this half hour. We'll get to your calls or news roundup, information overload, and news you won't find anywhere else. I mean, it is amazing. Just our capacity to try and keep up is literally draining every resource we have. The news cycle is that fast. We continue. Sarah Carter is with us from Circa.com, and we are asking questions that apparently nobody else in the media wants to ask. I want to go back to the big bombshell that you dropped, which is it seems that you have confirmed that Loretta Lynch was confronted with information by James Comey about the fact that she was telling people, or evidence to the sort, that under no circumstances was Hillary Clinton ever going to get indicted. And then apparently she wouldn't answer, stared at him, and then said, any other questions? And he had to leave.
That's correct, Sean. This was briefed to numerous lawmakers. It wasn't just one briefing to one lawmaker. Comey had briefed, the former director of the FBI had briefed to numerous lawmakers in recent months about this confrontation that he had with Loretta Lynch. That in and of itself, according to senior lawmakers that we've spoken with, was enough and is enough to pursue an investigation into Loretta Lynch and whether she obstructed justice when it came to the Hillary Clinton investigation. I think what's even more interesting about this is that we're focused so much on this creepy crawl, mission creep of what's happening with the Trump administration, but yet there was a sufficient amount of evidence regarding Hillary Clinton herself. And I think at the time, and this is talking to sources, so we're putting together pieces of a puzzle, right, Sean? But talking to sources that say, you know, at that point in time, Comey and quite a few other people believed that Hillary Clinton would become president of the United States. So there was this hesitation. Would they pursue charges against the possible future president of the United States?
Well, they don't have any problem pursuing them against the current president, even making him up.
And that's the point. That's the point right here. We could see that he made the decision. He made the decision, not the Department of Justice. Okay, granted, it was under Loretta Lynch. He could have passed it off to somebody else. But he made the decision not to move forward with charges. He made the decision not to give that up to the Department of Justice and base it on his own, you know, the FBI's own investigation, which, by the way, many of the FBI agents that were covering that case in particular, the Russia case, the Clinton Foundation, the email server case, are irate about that it never went forward. So we have to ask these questions. What happened and what is still happening within our own government that there are these continuous leaks that appear to be just one-sided, that appear to be targeting the administration, and yet under the Clinton administration, there was so much evidence. There was so much that could have been investigated, and it was basically shut down from the get-go.
So in other words, there really is,
everyone.
Yeah, well, immunity deals, think of the people that worked that had their computers, they got to keep their computers, and then they got an immunity deal, or the DNC gets to say, no, shush away, you FBI people, we're going to hire our own investigators to our computers. I mean, there's so many examples of this double standard. To me, I've been saying it's ass backwards. They're going after the wrong people. There is a Russia conspiracy story. There is an obstruction story, but it's not what they've been telling us. It's the Uranium One deal, it's Loretta Lynch, and it's felonies committed by Hillary. There are things that have happened here, but they ignore those.
Yes, and I think to the detriment of our country, too, because these are questions that really need to be answered. We never had the answers to the Uranium One deal. We know what happened, but we don't know what really happened behind the scenes. We also know that there was enormous amount of money, millions of dollars, that were being put into the Clinton Foundation from that. I know speaking to FBI sources and law enforcement sources and Justice Department sources, they felt they had enough not only on the Uranium One deal, but they felt they had enough on the Clinton Foundation to move forward with an indictment. They even felt they had enough when it came to Haiti. So these are very real issues. This isn't hyperbole. I'm not making this up. This is coming from sources even within the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Right, we got to take a break. We got to let it go here because I'm up on a clock. Sarah, you're just doing phenomenal work, and I know people at some point are going to say, wow, she, John Solomon, Sorka News, and even that idiot Hannity were way ahead of the curve on all of this, whether they like it or not. It's just inevitable. Sarah, we appreciate your hard work, sharing it with our audience as usual. We'll see you tonight on TV, and thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Sean.
When we come back, wide open telephones on this Monday, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza, Hannity Tonight, Hatred, the Right Fighting Back, and the Real Crimes That Should Be Investigated, 10 Eastern.
Coming up next, the Hannity Fake News Roundup.
Do conservatives who have spent so long making the case for tolerance and free speech, do you really want to now be storming the stage of a William Shakespeare play to shout it down? Does this make any sense? This may make sense in the minds of people like Sean Hannity, but really.
And the moral of the play, by the way, is not that he's assassinated and it all turns out great.
No.
The moral of the play is he's killed and everything goes to pot.
Right. And you know, okay. Ben,
how many of these people have read this play?
You have to read.
How many of these protesters have actually read this play? How many could tell you what century William Shakespeare wrote, what century Julius Caesar lived? This is cringeworthy.
I don't even know where to begin here. Glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. This is typical liberal Joe. The same guy calling the president a schmuck on his television program. The same guy that, you know, with him and Mika, it is actually, you want to speak of a tragedy, the tragedy of Julius Caesar, which was written by Shakespeare, by the way, believed to have been written in 1599. Et tu, Brute? Do you want me to go through the whole entire play as evidence that I know the story of Julius Caesar? Nobody cares. It's not the point here. There is this just arrogant D.C., New York, elitist, pompous, just out of touch arrogance that exists among the Mikas and the Joes and the Charlie, whatever his name is, from Wisconsin, that these people cannot get over, nor will they ever understand what life was like, is like in this country for the average American that went and voted for Donald Trump. I don't mind being attacked. It's part of what I do for a living. It's nonstop at this point. It's never been this unhinged against me, but that's not the point. And people will say, as I mentioned earlier, well, with Hannity, what about in 2012? There was a big instance. It was Obama, not... Okay, it wasn't the big national issue that this is today. It wasn't on the heels of what happened last week in Alexandria, Virginia. It was not on the heels of a severed head, ISIS pose Kathy Griffin. I can't remember liberal Joe and Mika. They're such a cute, cute couple, aren't they, Linda? They're so adorable. I wonder if they hold hands under the desk as they're reading the news to each other and patting each other on the back and having emotional breakdowns on their show every morning.
Just precious.
You know what's amazing? Never saw one show in the history of cable television that got more press. With the worst ratings. They never can get ratings. You know, I remember I actually went back and looked. At some point, you know, part of the 30 people that I took out at 9 o'clock at night when I was in that slot on Fox News, Joe was one of them. And I looked at his nightly rate. They were atrocious. It was either he moves after Imus got fired or his career in television was over. But it's not here nor there.
But wait, do you remember the other thing they failed at?
What?
Because we used to work with them over at the ex-wife.
Yeah, the ex-wife.
They were just charming.
Oh, by the way, they're only leaving a small hiatus, and they're just going to come back with something even bigger. How many years ago was the something bigger coming?
I don't know about
that. We're coming back. I don't know
if they ever arrived, my friend.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, god-awful there, too. You know, the idea that their argument is going to be that, do they even know, you know, the history of the tragedy of Julius Caesar and Shakespeare and Brutus and what year it could have been written? By the way, it's believed to have been written, I think, if I remember correctly from school, I haven't looked it up in a while, you know, just before 60 or 1600. And, you know, it actually has, from my memory here, some similarities to, I guess, political battles and so on and so forth going on in today's day and age. But Caesar's assassination, sure, it's one of the most famous scenes in the play, occurring Act 3, Scene 1. I remember reading it this morning. I didn't go back and look. And with all of that said, it's irrelevant. You know, what's relevant is the fact that this is something liberals now enjoy. This is something the elite in New York think is art. Elephant dung on the Virgin Mary is art. If you're putting an American flag in the toilet, it's art. If you stomp on an American flag, it is art. If you burn an American flag, it's expression. And all I'm saying is, okay, well, let's think of historic religious figures and let's put them in the play instead of Trump, and they get killed every night. What do you think some of the reaction might be in the country? Now, wouldn't that be unnecessarily provocative? Wouldn't people on, you know, liberal NBC, Joe, wouldn't they be going insane? And wouldn't you probably join with them? There's no greater champion than free speech, and consistently so, than I have been over the course of my entire career. And I don't have any problem. If this is where you liberals want to go, and this is your form of expression, you have every right to do it. But same, too, with those people, conservatives, that feel this is contributing to an atmosphere of delegitimization, dehumanization, hatred, and subjecting the president to, you know, well, you know, the guy you call a schmuck, Liberal Joe, and the guy that you attack every day, Mika, the person you have an emotional breakdown with Joe every morning about, and, oh, I'm about to faint. It's horrible. And all of this does accomplish one thing, and it's what motivated me in the election. All these people sense that they know me. They don't know anything about me. They don't know anything about my views. They don't listen to this radio program. But what motivated me, if you are a regular listener, you know where I'm going. How is it possible we have 13 million more Americans on food stamps under Obama? 50 million total. 8 million more in poverty under Obama. Lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. Lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. How is it, you know, that we have the worst recovery since the 40s? And if you look at 1 in 6 men, 18 to 34, they're either in prison or living home with mommy and daddy in the basement on a couch. And they can't get an opportunity to expand their lives and the American dream shut off for them. So all of this, and you couple it with the investigative creep, you couple this with Joe and Mika's network literally becoming the Russia-Trump collusion truther network, and you realize that all the time that the president is spending with lawyers, watching television and conspiracy theories, black helicopter conspiracy theories, and all the investigative creep that is now going on that's occupying 80% of the time. And then in their arrogance, they're going to lecture us. Well, what do you know about Julius Caesar anyway? Do you even know? Do you ever read the play? Do you ever see it? How does that impact the life of somebody that's out of work, in poverty, and on food stamps? I don't give a flying rip about the historical context that you're using to justify what is the objectification of a president of the United States to make a cheap political point. when really it's just a roundabout way of showing violence against the president of the United States. I'm not cool with it. I'm sorry. Maybe I don't fit into your artistic, cool camp of kids here. There's nothing funny about Kathy Griffin. There's nothing funny about a nightly assassination of a U.S. president. There's nothing funny when the president of the United States is subjected to nightly lies by their network and CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post. None of this is funny to me. None of this advances the interests of our country. None of this is helping the men and women that I care about. Maybe you guys just care about your wedding. And maybe, you know, the Never Trumpers care about relevance again. And maybe they just care about proving to everybody else, see, we were right. But you wouldn't have gotten the Supreme Court justice that you got under Trump with Hillary. You certainly wouldn't have had an honest, truthful, you know, individual. You would have had a felon in the White House. Anyway, I'm just, you know, I can handle all of this. I can't stand more than anything else arrogant elitism. You know, like people thought I was taking a shot at Megyn Kelly last night because I tweeted out, show the tapes, NBC. If you're going to interview somebody for hours and then edit it down to 11 minutes, it's not a critique of her. It's a critique of the format. Because I went through this with Ted Koppel. And, you know, he interviews me for 50-some-odd minutes, runs a minute and 7 seconds. And he takes it out of context. And he makes himself look great. I'm like, release the tapes, Ted. Show the country what really happened in this room. So, I just don't... You want to know why I've never been to a Washington Correspondents' Dinner? Linda, you're shaking your head. Amen. I see you. It's because of people like this. I do not like them. I never have. I never will. I'm never going to be a part of their club. I never want to be a part of their club. This is just the perfect example of the difference between people like me and them. I want no part of this cabal of you tweet me, I'll tweet you, and we're the cool kids, and oh, can you believe our president of the United States? And oh, he's on Twitter. It's so unbecoming of the office. Do they even know what Shakespeare and caviar are, for crying out loud? Really? That helps somebody in poverty? Have these people ever been to a... Have they ever been to a public housing unit? I've been in Georgia Tech with Homes and Peppermill and a bunch of other places. Oh, yeah, I was at the home of a young girl who lost her life at 2 years old because cockroaches infested the place at government housing, and telling the story that this shouldn't happen in America. And when I walked into one of the units, I was shocked, infested with roaches everywhere. We're really helping people in this situation? No, we're not. You know, maybe they never washed dishes or did the jobs I've done my whole life. Those are the people I identify with. Those are the people you would think people in Wisconsin might identify with. And people in Michigan, certainly, that have been driven out of their jobs and they lost half the population of Detroit, one of America's great cities. Or the crap that people in Ohio have had to go through, or Pennsylvania or Pittsburgh, and they lose the steel industry. And then you get a president saying, I want to bring these jobs back, and now spending 80% of his time dealing with these jackasses with their heads up their ass on MSNBC. That's who I care about. I care about the people. Well, Hannity, you know, I don't know. Maybe you need to appreciate Shakespeare more. Linda, do I not appreciate Shakespeare?
I think you love Shakespeare.
I don't give a flying rip about Shakespeare.
Don't lie. You know you love it. We talk about it every day here. It's so amazing.
Is it me? Is there anything that's wrong in my perception here? It's like, for example, what does anyone care? If you're in poverty on food stamps, out of work, do you give a rip about the stock market? I'm glad it's going up, but it's never been a barometer for me. Because in one sense, yeah, maybe it shows a growing economy. Okay, it's hope there. But that's not helping create energy independence. Will get jobs. Bringing back, making, you know, securing our border so people can't take jobs from Americans at half the salary, that's going to keep jobs. incentivizing business with a lower corporate tax rate, that's going to keep jobs. Repatriating money from multinational corporations, that's going to keep jobs. Putting originalists on the Supreme Court will impact the country for generations. I'm sorry, I'm not into Shakespeare.
You know what I find interesting, Sean? Last year when you and the president went to Louisiana, when that huge hurricane struck and you went through all those homes and you looked at all the damage, and we talked about, you know, the fact that the president at the time, President Obama, didn't go. And at the time, that was candidate Trump. But I don't think any of these people covered that news. They weren't interested in those people.
You know, you know the people that were in those homes? And we should go back. I remember I spoke to the people before we did the show that night. And they were in a, by the way, all volunteers. Franklin Graham was there with Samaritan's Purse. I try and donate money to Samaritan's Purse because they do such good work. And I got to tell you, all I looked at, these are people that worked hard to get that home, and their lives are upturned. I mean, just turned upside down. Really? You think they give a flying rip about Shakespeare? You think they care about Et tu, Brute? Oh, God, it's such arrogance. Why am I so mad over this? Because I just feel they're so out of touch. Where's all this anger coming from at me? Do you know?
I think it's coffee.
Is that what you do?
I'll think about it in the break.
I got to take a break? Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you.
800-941-SEAN is our number. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity, tonight, fair and balanced on the Fox News Channel. We will address the growing rage in the liberal left. Also, you'll see and meet the woman that actually got arrested because she dared to stand up to the nightly assassination of Shakespeare in the park. And you don't want to miss it. Newt Gingrich will join us tonight. Also, three of the Republicans targeted for assassination. Mo Brooks, Trent Franks, Morgan Griffin. And the latest on the deep state, Jay Sekulow, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, 10 Eastern. We'll back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.